It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan Gervie and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervie and Carrie Kasem.
A good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening on the internet on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervie, and I am your host of Gervie's Law. Of course, I'm the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan Gervie and Wynn, and today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. You know, usually at this time I introduce my co-host, and this is starting to become a little bit of a habit that I have to make an excuse for my co-host, Carrie Kasem. She's not here today, again. So we have to have a little conversation with Carrie to find out whether she is just too busy to be the co-host of Gervie's Law, because I don't even know where she is. She did tell us she couldn't make it, but she's busy. It's holiday season. She's got so many great causes that she's working for. Apparently one of them is not Gervie's Law. So we have a great show today, and Carrie's going to kill me if she hears this. Hopefully she's listening. We do have a great show today because we are privileged and honored to have with us Lisa Bloom. Of course, Lisa Bloom is with the Bloom Firm. She's been a friend of this show and been on the show a number of times. There are so many incredibly important issues to talk to Lisa about, and she knows everything. There's nothing that Lisa can't comment on, but we want to hear it from, I'm not going to say the horse's mouth, because she is beautiful, but and horses are beautiful, but we want to talk to her about Janice Dickinson and the Bill Cosby deposition, because that's something that a lot of people have been asking about. When is Bill Cosby's deposition going to take place? And secondly, we're going to talk about some of the unfortunate events that have occurred over the last couple weeks, of course, in San Bernardino. We want to talk about what's going on in the workplace, whether there's violence in the workplace or whether we need to have new policies of not hiring Muslims. And we probably won't go that far. This is not Donald Trump radio. But again, we will talk about what you do when you fear someone in your workplace may be a terrorist. And I'm not talking about just terrorizing your workplace, but actually being in bed with some really bad, nasty forces in the world. Another topic we want to talk about, another lawsuit. There's so many lawsuits that are filed. Steve Sarkisian, of course, is now suing USC, saying that he was wrongfully terminated, that he deserved a chance from USC and Pat Hayden, and they should not have terminated him because he had an alcohol problem, he had stress on the job, and a number of other complaints and symptoms that should have been accommodated versus just giving him the heave-ho. So Lisa has a lot of expertise in that area because she has a firm that does employment law amongst all of these other cases that she handles, and they are experts in employment law. That's the Bloom Firm. Before we get to Lisa, and you won't want to miss her, I do want to make one comment because something really touched my heart this week. This week I was reading, I'm sure a number of you saw Scott Weiland's ex-wife, Mary Forsberg Weiland, wrote a piece that went viral talking about the fact that Scott Weiland, the lead singer for Stone Temple Pilots, who unfortunately died, and we're still not sure exactly, but of course we know that he's had so many problems with addiction and other types of nefarious problems that creep into a rock star's being. She wrote this letter saying don't glorify him, and talked about her kids. The father, he was the father of two children, Noah and Lucy, Lucy 13, Noah 15. And she talked about how he was never available to them and said, we are glorifying him as a rock star. And of course, he was a genius as a rock star. But as a human being, really, what was he? How did he deal with being a father? Well, apparently he wasn't there for his kids. Even when he was there for his kids, he wasn't. And it had such a profound effect on those two kids, Noah and Lucy. And Mary Forsberg Weiland talked about how it just was impossible. She tried so hard to bring him into the family, and he put his own issues and problems ahead of his kids. This touched a real nerve with me. I have two kids. They're much younger. Hudson is going to be 3 next week, and Harper is going to be 2 in February. And I can't tell you how important it is for me to spend time with them, to be there for them. I don't care what it is. They are my priority. I brought them into the world along with my beautiful wife, Nancy. And we have a responsibility. I don't care if I'm a rock star. I'm not. You know, I understand addiction. I understand disease. I understand weakness. But at the same time, we need to understand children. We need to change our role as parents and put priorities in the place where they need to be. And that is raising great kids with good values and put our energy into it. Our world is in trouble, not only because of terrorism, but because of parents who are indifferent or allowing their own problems to get the better of them and to not take care of their children, show the love and care and all the concern that they need to, so that our kids can grow up and feel proud of their mother and father and not have a Scott Weiland as a father who apparently put all of his problems first. And Mary said in her letter that a rock star doesn't need to be succumbing to these demons. Yes, it's difficult. Yes, there are problems. There are challenges. But you need to think of your kids first. So all of you who are listening right now, I want you to give your kids a hug and tell them that you will be there for them through thick or through thin. And you're not going to put yourself before your kids, because when you do, and then it's too late, our society suffers, because the people who grow up to cause havoc in our world are your kids, who weren't loved and cared for and shown the respect that they all should be shown. And that is to take time and take concern for everything to help them along the way. We are going to be right back after this message. You're listening to Gervie's Law. Don't miss Lisa Bloom. She's next.
To be made any knowingly false or fraudulent material statement or material representation for the purposes of obtaining workers' compensation benefits is guilty of a felony.
Another day at work. The pain is getting worse, and I'm afraid to say anything because I need this job, and I don't want to get fired. If I wasn't the only one supporting the family, I'd quit.
Is this you? Are you suffering every day while your injuries get worse, and there seems to be nowhere to turn? Or do you have an injury that was brought on gradually by repetitive motion, and now you can't perform your job duties at all? For over 35 years, the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn has represented those who have sustained an injury on the job or have become disabled as a result of work. They're the experts in workers' compensation. You need an advocate. You need someone who cares about the injured worker. You need the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn to get you through the nightmare. Friends, if you're suffering with a cumulative work injury, the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn is in business to help you. Find out more. Call the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, 855-4-RGW-LAW. That's 855-4-RGW-LAW. Or go to rgwlawfirm.com. First consultations are free.
Stamps.com has an opening for a quality assurance analyst to test Windows and web services and perform data validation with back-end servers. Mail resumes and reference job title to Human Resources, 1990 East Grand Avenue, El Segundo, California, 90245.
Norm's breakfast, lunch, and dinner bowls are right up your alley. Complete meals piled high with eggs and fixings, pasta, or entree salads. Starting at $8.49. At Norm's, it's not how you roll, it's how you bowl. Open 24/7. Normsrestaurants.com.
Musical comedy is back with a bang. Bullets Over Broadway, written by Woody Allen with direction and choreography by Susan Stroman, is Broadway's newest musical comedy, loaded with big laughs, colorful characters, and the music that made the 20s roar. And in some gangsters, gals, showstoppers, and toe-tappers. And you've got the best musical in town.
Bullets Over Broadway, coming to the Hollywood Pantages Theater January 5th through the 24th. Visit Ticketmaster.com.
I suggest you get your tickets today.
Coming up on the next Drive Home with Jillian Barbary and John Phillips, all the latest dramatic developments from San Bernardino and your phone calls. Live and local right after Dr. Drew and Psycho Mike right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
And we are back. You are listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. I am off my soapbox. For those of you who were listening in the first segment, I introduced the show and talked about how we need to give our kids a hug. And I talked about what we are in store for today without Carrie Kasem, my co-host, who is not here. In her place, which we are so happy to have, is Lisa Bloom. Lisa Bloom, of course, is the trial attorney from the Bloom Firm and the legal analyst for AVO. She represents some high-profile people in her cases. Her firm does a lot of great work with employment law and other law, helping people who have been harmed, victims. Lisa, welcome back to Gervie's Law.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. You have so much to say. And of course, your name has been in the news recently over the last couple months because we are hearing all about this Bill Cosby deposition. And why don't you give the folks a background? You represent Janice Dickinson. Why is Bill Cosby's deposition going to be taken?
Sure. Yes, I'm very proud to represent supermodel Janice Dickinson. She is one of the 50-plus women who now say that Bill Cosby drugged and sexually assaulted them or attempted to do that. And she alleges that in 1982, Mr. Cosby drugged her and raped her in Lake Tahoe, Nevada. Last year, she came out publicly with that allegation. Mr. Cosby, through his attorney, called her a liar, said she was fabricating, said she was making it up. And so we sued not for the child sexual abuse because that's time barred, meaning our time to file that case was long since expired. But we sued for defamation, and there's a one-year time period where you can sue for defamation. So we were within that 1 year. We sued for defamation, and defamation is essentially saying that you made a false statement publicly that tends to damage my reputation, and that's what this case is all about. Mr. Cosby, through his attorneys, filed a very early motion in the case that's called an anti-slap motion, which is simply to say, judge, throw the whole case out. You know, the case has no merit. And you can do that in cases involving speech in California. The anti-slap motion stays discovery. I know this is getting a little legalistic, but I'm trying to.
That's okay, Lisa. This is a law show. We
okay.
want. I mean, let's not talk about hugging our kids through the whole show. Let's talk about law.
Okay, good. So, typically, once that motion is filed, discovery is stayed, which means I can't take any depositions, nor can they. I can't ask for any documents, nor can they. But there is an exception, and that's what we went in under, and we said, judge, we believe we have good cause for discovery, notwithstanding that discovery stay. We need to take Mr. Cosby's deposition and the deposition of his attorney who made the statements so that we can prove malice in opposition to the motion. Malice is one of the elements of defamation. Malice in this context, it simply means that they knew when they made these statements that they were false.
So, Lisa, let me ask you. Okay, we're going to get to the judge agreed, but I just have a question. Why is that an exception or potentially exception to this stay?
Because we have to show, in opposition to the anti-slap motion, evidence in support of each of the elements of our claim. How can I show what was in the mind of Mr. Cosby and his attorney unless I can take their deposition and ask them questions about it?
Makes perfect
sense.
Only
way I can get that evidence.
That
right.
makes
the judge
absolute
agreed.
Sense. Right.
The judge agreed about a month ago and said, okay, you get the depositions of Mr. Cosby and Mr. Singer. You get them expedited because we need to move this case along.
Right.
And she set dates in November, or she set a deadline in November, and then the parties agreed on dates in November. But then Mr. Cosby, because, look, he has unlimited legal resources.
Yeah.
He's got a law firm with 700 attorneys up against little old me. Actually, he has several law firms representing him, but that's just one of them.
Yeah, but Lisa, you're on the right side of justice. Who cares how many attorneys they have?
Listen, this is the case in all of my cases. It's always a giant law firm because we're always suing a big company or a wealthy individual or a government entity. So I'm very used to it.
It's wonderful being a David against Goliath.
It really is. And by the way, I used to work at a big law firm many years ago, and I left to have my own practice. But so I have that training. And my daughter currently is a new lawyer at a big law firm in New York. So I don't hold being a big law firm against anyone, but I do take special enjoyment litigating against them.
We talked last time you were on the show about your daughter who had passed the bar, and she was looking for a job. She's now employed. We are waiting until she comes home to L.A. to join her mother with her at the Bloom firm.
That would be a lot of fun. But right now, I'm very proud of her. She's working in a big firm, and she's doing very well. And she's doing some asylum refugee work, some good pro bono work, and, you know, she's getting the great training, and it's all good.
And you know what? And I give her so much credit, because I'm a little bit going off on a tangent here, but so many new attorneys think that they can do it all. They don't realize that they need to get a good base. For what you do now, that's years of experience to be able mm-hmm. to handle situations. And I don't care how smart you are, you need to put in the time. And too many attorneys come to me and they say, you know, I want to be a trial attorney. I say, great, I admire that, but let's do some work that you can, establish yourself and learn how to deal with people before you become a trial attorney.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. So anyway, going back to Janice Dickinson and Bill Cosby, judge ordered the depositions. They took up an emergency appeal, which is called a writ petition, and they went up to the Court of Appeals, and they said, essentially, this is an emergency. It will cause us irreparable injury if we have to show up to these depositions. We should not be required to do it. The Court of Appeals issued a stay, meaning no depositions. Depositions are temporarily off the table while the Court of Appeals takes the time to decide the issue. Ordered full briefing. Cosby's team submitted their brief. We submitted our brief. They submitted their reply brief. And now we're waiting for the Court of Appeals to either make a ruling saying this is all denied, the depositions go forward, which, of course, we would prefer that ruling, or we are really considering this, and therefore there should be oral argument.
Now,
and those are the two choices. We don't know which one they're going to decide.
If they come back with a ruling that you can move forward with the deposition, do you expect that Cosby's lawyers will file a further appeal?
To the California Supreme Court, perhaps.
Right.
Perhaps, because again, you know, when you have unlimited funds and resources, to go right ahead. But my favorite headline last week was Bill Cosby desperate not to do deposition with Lisa Bloom.
That is great.
I didn't write that headline, but I did enjoy it. And you kind of have to wonder, why is he spending what is surely, I don't know, I'm going to take a guess, $30,000, $50,000 or more in attorney fees to fight a deposition, which would probably be a half-a-day deposition on this one issue of malice, which would probably cost him less than $10,000. You know, why is he doing
Lisa,
this? Why? Why? Why?
You know, this is what's wrong with our legal system today, that people can file all kinds of appeals. They can file petitions, objections. And all they're doing is delaying what we consider near and dear to everyone, every one of us, the lawyer, is due process. How are they going to get around it? You have due process. The lawsuit has been filed. Why wouldn't he be deposed? Why? I mean, it's just...
Well, he will be. It's either now or it's later, Alan. You and I know that. So listen, either we get it now, as the trial judge orders, or the Court of Appeals says you don't get it now on this early phase because there is a discovery stay and we don't think it should be open. That's fine. Then we'll oppose their anti-SLAPP motion, their motion to dismiss. I think we're going to win that. And
right.
Then the next step is then the discovery stays off and then we get a deposition. So we either get it now or we get it later. We're going to get it one way or the other because we're not going to give up. Janice Dickinson's not giving up. We're behind her 100%. And we're going to win this thing. It just takes a long time.
Now, your mother, Gloria Allred, has deposed Cosby, correct?
Yes. All I know, because there's a lot of confidentiality in that case, all I know is what I hear in the news, and she gave a press conference, and she said they did. So, yes, I believe they did.
And that was with respect to her client, is a Judy I don't know how to pronounce her last name.
H-U-T-H.
I'm not sure how to pronounce that, but... you don't know anything about what happened in that deposition, do you?
I only know what I saw in the press conference. I think she said they spent the day together, and she's thinking there will be a second day. And my interpretation of that is there were probably so many objections that she feels they need to go in and ask the judge to order him to answer certain questions. So as you know, Alan, you know, depositions are kind of messy. They're kind of a messy thing. I personally think we need to tighten up the rules of deposition because there's no judge in the room. So everybody gets around a conference table in some lawyer's office generally. There's a court reporter and sometimes there's a videographer, but there's no judge. And so lawyers tend to run wild and make
they
all
do.
Kinds of silly objections that they would never make if there was a judge in a room. And they would never do that in a courtroom.
And then
you have to make a motion. It's also expensive. And go into court and say, here's the 27 questions they didn't answer. Judge, order them to answer. And the judge says, okay, I'm going to order them to answer the following 17. But now they've already had all this time to prepare their answers. Now they could stare at those questions and think about them. And then, you know, you lose the advantage of just being able to ask a person on the spot.
People don't realize that it really is a free-for-all, and I'm probably guilty of it as well. I mean, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. The amount of talking objections, people think, oh, it's going to be a legal objection. They're going to say calls for speculation. But what you hear in depositions, and people who have their depositions taken are probably shocked to hear, lawyers just saying whatever they want, providing argument.
Yeah.
I mean, one of my favorites is, oh, you're testifying for your client, you know.
And
there really isn't any hard and fast rules, because people know to do motions, to go to court and everything on depositions, it's just not practical. So whatever happens.
Crazy with it. Yeah, so, and it's a shame.
We need to take a quick break, but one last question before our break. Now, it's holiday season. Don't you just sometimes sit together with your mom, Gloria Allred, and say, hey, Mom, no one's listening. What was it like? What did Cosby have to say?
No, because I already know. First of all, neither of us would ever ask the other to violate our ethical obligations. And secondly, I already know what he has to say because I've read big chunks of his depositions from 2005, 2006 in the Andrea Constan case. And I know that he's terrible in depositions, and that's why his lawyers don't want him to go to any more depositions.
That makes sense. And he's afraid.
And his lawyers are going to jump up and down and object to everything, which is what they did in the ones that I read.
Bill Cosby is afraid of Lisa Bloom. It said it in the headlines. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Lisa Bloom. We're going to talk a little bit more about Marty Singer and the attorneys for Bill Cosby, the new attorney, and get into some other really important issues. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
To be made any knowingly false or fraudulent material statement or material representation for the purposes of obtaining workers' compensation benefits is guilty of a felony.
Another day at work. The pain is getting worse, and I'm afraid to say anything because I need this job, and I don't want to get fired. If I wasn't the only one supporting the family, I'd quit.
Is this you? Are you suffering every day while your injuries get worse, and there seems to be nowhere to turn? Or do you have an injury that was brought on gradually by repetitive motion, and now you can't perform your job duties at all? For over 35 years, the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn has represented those who have sustained an injury on the job or have become disabled as a result of work. They're the experts in workers' compensation. You need an advocate. You need someone who cares about the injured worker. You need the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn to get you through the nightmare. Friends, if you're suffering with a cumulative work injury, the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn is in business to help you. Find out more. Call the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn, 855-4-RGW-LAW. That's 855-4-RGW-LAW. Or go to rgwlawfirm.com. First consultations are free.
Men, if you're like me, you appreciate the feeling of a clean, smooth shave from a quality blade. The sort of shave that cuts clean, without the burn. So why are you messing around with generic razors that cost $32 for an 8-pack, when you can shave with Harry's high-quality German-engineered blades for half the price? And if saving money and a clean shave isn't incentive enough, Harry's will give you their starter set, complete with a razor, three of their world-famous blades, and shaving cream for just $15. And shipping is always free. We'll also give you $5 off your first order. Our way of saying thank you for trying us. How are we able to save you all this money and still give you the best shave you'll ever enjoy? By owning the factory that manufactures them. That's how. So go to Harry's.com right now and enter code 1414 at checkout. That's Harry's.com, code 1414.
Do not attempt to adjust your receivers.
He is in control.
Scientists talking about an alien megastructure.
They're out there, and they're listening. So should you. Midnight in the Desert with Art Bell. Live at 10.
It's pretty chilling.
The truth is out here.
Talk Radio 790.
KABC.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice from a friend? Call Alan Gervey and Carrie Kasem now at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
We are back right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. I'm Alan Gervey. This is Gervey's Law. Carrie Kasem is not here with me today. We have on the phone Lisa Bloom. Lisa Bloom is a trial attorney extraordinaire. She's from the Bloom Firm, and she's a legal analyst for Avvo. If you go to thebloomfirm.com, if you're curious as to what Lisa looks like, you need to go to thebloomfirm.com because you will be shocked at how such a tough and respected attorney look so approachable. That's all I have to say. She is approachable.
Now, thank you.
As she's giggling here, I want to hear about someone who doesn't seem that approachable. Marty Singer. What's up with him? Why, first of all, he's a defendant in the Janice Dickinson lawsuit for defamation. Isn't that true?
That is correct.
And he is no longer the attorney for Bill Cosby. We have a fellow named Christopher Tabak, who's now the attorney. Is that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So what happened there? Did Marty Singer just said, you know what, I can't deal with this Lisa Bloom. I need to get off this case?
Well, I don't know exactly what happened because nobody's talking. I know that, as you say, Mr. Singer is no longer representing Mr. Cosby. And I will also tell you that when we filed the case, we initially filed only against Bill Cosby because we feel that he's really, you know, the person who's responsible for everything. But as time went by, and among other things, Mr. Cosby argues that he's not responsible for the statements made by his attorney, we realized, and as the statute of limitations was approaching, we realized that we had to bring in Mr. Singer as well as a defendant. And I will tell you, I've had a number of cases against Mr. Singer over the years, because he tends to represent Hollywood bad boys, and I tend to represent their victims. And we've had some fairly acrimonious cases, one against the other, although we've also managed to be civil with each other on many occasions as well. I take no joy in suing another lawyer. I do believe in professional courtesy. It's not something that I really wanted to do. But you know that we are ethically obligated to do what's in the best interest of our clients and to zealously represent our clients. Those are the ethical rules. And I didn't feel that I was appropriately representing my client if I didn't bring in all of the appropriate defendants. So we did bring in Mr. Singer at the end of November, just before the statute of limitations would have run, because he is, after all, the one who made defamatory statements against Janice Dickinson.
Now, what about litigation privilege? A lot of times we are providing arguments and petitions and documents, and we say things that maybe on the outside world could be bordering on slander, libel, defamation. What about in this case? Can he use that as a defense?
No, I think the law is crystal clear in California on litigation privilege, and it is that as to legal documents that you file in court, those are privileged. You can't sue somebody for defamation for putting something in a complaint or an answer or a deposition, for example. But when you're making a press statement, which is what Mr. Singer did on behalf of Mr. Cosby, those are not subject to the litigation privilege. When you take to the microphones and make comments, for example, the comments I'm making to you here today, I have to be careful in the words that I choose because the litigation privilege does not apply to statements that you make to the media.
Yeah, if I were you, I would say a lot more derogatory things against Marty Singer. But, of course, you're being very professional, as you have to be. Now, does he plan legal action against Janice Dickinson? I read somewhere where he wants to get back at Janice Dickinson. Do you know anything about that?
I don't. I don't know what he means by that. He hasn't filed anything against her. So that would be a question for him. I think, you know, he also threatened me. I would say that Marty Singer makes a lot of threats. I mean, that's out there in the public record. He's threatened a lot of people over the years.
Yeah, in Deadline Hollywood, he said, "I'm looking forward to pursuing claims against Janice Dickinson and Lisa Bloom after I prevail in this action." And
right.
It's really interesting because the headline is that he plans legal action against Janice Dickinson. But there's a little footnote there, and that is after I prevail in this action. That's...
Right, so he probably means malicious prosecution
action.
Which, as you know, is a very high standard. You have to not only win the case, but show that the case was brought maliciously. I think he's the one that made the defamatory statement. This is not the first defamation case against Marty Singer. I don't lose any sleep over that issue at night.
Is he trying to get Judge Deborah Katz off the case?
He is. And we have posted on my website all of the court filings in this case because so many people in media ask us about them. So that's thebloomfirm.com, T-H-E-B-L-O-O-M, that's my name, bloomfirm.com, and we have all the court filings there. Yeah, so when he came into the case, He filed a peremptory strike against our judge, which means he wants to have her removed from the case. We filed a brief opposing that because our position is that you get one peremptory per side,
right?
Not per defendant. And his co-defendant, Bill Cosby, already used his on another judge early in the case. So we like Judge Deborah Weintraub. We think she's done an excellent job so far, and we don't think he has the right to strike her. That issue has not been decided. That's also pending.
How frustrating is it for you to see all these what I call legal maneuverings and not have an opportunity to do what you do best, which is to prove a case?
It's not frustrating at all. Listen, I signed up for this. I love being a litigator. I love the fight. I'm confident this is a fight we're going to win. We may not win every battle along the way, every little pretrial skirmish, but we are going to win this case because I believe in Janice Dickinson. I believe that she's telling the truth. We have declarations from a number of witnesses that she told them many years before any other woman came forward that Bill Cosby had drugged and raped her. I'm confident we're going to prevail, like I said. So they can make all their motions and they can skirmish around, and that's fine. But we're going to win this case. And honestly, I do enjoy the fight. I was national debate champion when I was in college.
And that was...
I liked this kind of thing.
Right. And you went to, of course, Yale Law School, where you often obviously had a lot of moot court experiences that prepared you well for these
mm-hmm.
fights. You know, when you talk about... the fight, and you talk about Marty Singer. In my experience, because I've cross-examined lawyers before, they make horrible witnesses.
Right, that is the conventional wisdom.
And, you know, I don't think it's going to be any different in this case. And the other thing is that you have to look at the bigger picture, and people shouldn't be so cocky to say things that they cannot back up. And if Marty Singer or Bill Cosby are going to talk about Janice Dickinson, then at least be able to back it up. And, you know, of course, truth is a defense for these mm-hmm. kind of cases. And what Lisa Bloom is telling us right now is there's loads of evidence to suggest that Janice Dickinson actually was sexually assaulted and did talk about it. There's evidence of it. It's not something that she made up recently. Isn't that true?
Correct. That's correct. And we have people under oath in declarations. Who substantiate that.
And then you just start looking at the credibility of the witnesses, one witness versus another.
I would also say that, you know, Bill Cosby's defenders always like to say, no court has ever found that he sexually assaulted anyone. And that's true. But what they fail to say is that he has spent so much time and money and, you know, had so many attorneys fighting in many cases to keep women out of court. You know, and that's what they're trying to do in our case. That's what they're trying to do in a lot of cases, is that they don't want these claims adjudicated on their merits. They want them thrown out early on in technicality.
Okay, my last question on this subject, and I know this is one that you could probably talk about for the next 15 minutes, and I'm sure you will want to. So here it is. Everyone wants to know. Anyone who says to me, you're going to talk to Lisa Bloom, ask her this question. What are you going to ask Bill Cosby when you get that chance?
Well, I don't want to give Mr. Cosby's team a script to prepare him with, so I really, I'm respectfully going to have to decline to answer that question. I'd like it to be a surprise in the room. I do have some good ideas, but I think I'm going to keep that under wraps.
All right.
Now.
Well, you're going to have to tell us after that takes place, and hopefully it'll take place very soon, the deposition, so we can find out a little bit more about his mindset. And, you know, what a lot of people want to see is they want to see him in the spotlight, having questions asked of him so that he can defend himself if he can. I want to turn our subject right now really quickly, because this past week there was a lawsuit filed by former USC football coach Steve Sarkisian. He filed a lawsuit against USC and claimed that athletic director Pat Hayden fired him in October instead of allowing him to seek treatment for alcoholism. Lisa Bloom at the Bloom Firm, they deal with a lot of important employment issues. Lisa, what is your take on this Steve Sarkisian allegation?
So you're right. We do a lot of employment cases, generally on the employee side, but not always. And so the first question is alcoholism a disability under the law? And the answer is yes. It is. Under both federal law, the Americans with Disabilities Act, and state law, which is the Fair Employment and Housing Act, alcoholism is a disability. It's a disease which causes a mental impairment that substantially limits one of your major life activities. And that all comes from the language of the law. Then the question is, did he ask for a reasonable accommodation? Because that's what a person with a disability is required to do under the law. You can't simply sit back and say, well, I'm not going to do my job because I have a disability, and if my employer fires me, then I can claim disability discrimination. No, that doesn't fly. You have to go to your employer and say, I have this disability. I have a broken leg. I have diabetes. I have alcoholism. And here is the reasonable accommodation that I'm requesting. Now, the employer is not obligated to then just give you whatever you ask for,
right.
But the employer is obligated to have a dialogue with you about it and to see if you can work something out. In this case, probably for him to go to rehab, right? Because alcoholism causes a lot of problems in the workplace. People are late, they don't do their job well, they're boisterous, they're whatever, causes a lot of problems. So you're not obligated as an employer to keep an alcoholic employee on staff who's not doing their job well. But you are required to at least engage in a dialogue about whether a reasonable accommodation can be reached. Now, I know that the defendant in this case says he never came and told us. And, in fact, just the opposite. He denied it. He said he wasn't alcoholic. So,
right.
I mean, that's an interesting issue.
And, you know, Lisa, interestingly, I read somewhere that he had said something to Pat Hayden, who, of course, is the athletic director at USC, about needing some time off or having a problem. And the quote from Pat Hayden, whether true or not, I'm just reporting it as I heard it, the quote is, unbelievable. Can't you even go back to the office to finish the day? So, you know, this is what we hear a lot from employers. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's reasonable, other times it isn't. In this particular case, if it was a workers' compensation case, and for those of you who aren't regular listeners to Gervie's Law, you should be, you should know that I am a workers' compensation attorney. Last year, I was named the applicant, which is the claimant attorney of the year by Work Comp Central for the whole state of California. So I have, hooray. So I have a little bit of credibility here. Basically, what you have to do is you have to report injuries. If you're experiencing stress on the job, which is causing perhaps your alcoholism to worsen or creating an alcoholism problem, you need to report it. You need to tell your employer. There is 24 hours after it's been reported as work-related. If you claim or a doctor has a note that says that it's work-related, they have to provide you with a claim form. If you file that claim form, you can articulate exactly what the problems are, whether it's stress, whether you're having palpitations, whatever it is, as a result of work. But it must be as a result of work for workers' compensation purposes. If you file the claim after you've been terminated and you didn't report it as an injury on the job, then it will be barred by statute. You can no longer file post-termination claims. That never used to be the case, but obviously it's the case to prevent people from filing claims after the fact when they didn't report it, unless, of course, there's a latent condition that is discovered after termination. In this particular case, if Steve Sarkisian had filed the claim, he would have some protection under what's called Labor Code Section 132A, which is discrimination against someone who files a workers' compensation claim or retaliation for filing the claim. He would have been protected to the degree that at least he would have had medical attention provided. There would be an investigation to determine whether it's work-related, whether it's stress on the job, et cetera, whether there was an aggravation of conditions. But the key thing here is I have no sympathy for Steve Sarkisian if he did not report it before he was terminated, if it wasn't acknowledged. Just like Lisa Bloom has said, that there has to be, if there's a reasonable accommodation, the employer has to know about it. So maybe in this particular case, it's going to come down to some factual issues. I'm not taking one side or another because as a good attorney, I want to know what happened from Pat Hayden's perspective and USC and what happened from Sarkisian. Would you agree with that,
Lisa?
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We have one more segment with Lisa Bloom of the Bloom Firm. It's bloomfirm.com, thebloomfirm.com. You're listening to Gervie's Law. We'll be right back.
Did you know that the average cost for a family of four to attend a professional baseball game is over $200? At the same time, over 40% of all sports, concert, and theater tickets go unsold. So how come we're all paying so much when so many seats go empty? I'm Adam Kanner, founder of ScoreBig.com. We found a way to work directly with teams and venues to get their unsold seats and pass the huge savings on to you. On ScoreBig.com, we guarantee you'll save on great sports, concert, and theater tickets. And we're not talking about last-minute nosebleed seats to events you don't want to see, but millions of great seats for the best events, days, weeks, even months in advance. On ScoreBig.com, when you successfully name a ticket price, on average, you'll save over 33% below box office price each time you buy, with no added fees or shipping charges ever. There are lots of places to buy tickets, but if you really want to save, then check out ScoreBig.com.
And now save even more at ScoreBig.com. Click on the radio mic and enter code 9191, and we'll take an additional $30 off your ticket purchase. That's ScoreBig.com, code 9191.
Hey, you like free stuff, right?
Yeah.
Well, KABC is on a mission to hook you up with tickets to the hottest concerts, comedy shows, movie premieres, theme parks, restaurants, gift cards, cash books, DVDs, hats, t-shirts, fans, money, Well, pretty much anything that we can get our hands on.
Gimme.
But before, hang on a second, you can get your hands on these cool prizes, there are a couple of rules.
KABC on-air contests are open to legal U.S. residents age 18 or older at the time of entry who reside in Los Angeles, Orange, San Bernardino, Riverside, or Ventura counties.
Employees of Cumulus Media Holdings Incorporated, its parent company, affiliates, related entities, and subsidiaries, other radio stations serving the listening area, and immediate family members and household members of all such employees are not eligible to participate.
Listeners may only win once every 30 days. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Limit one entry per person unless otherwise stated.
A complete copy of the rules can be obtained by visiting KABC.com/contest-rules.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yes, you're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. I'm Alan Gervie, and today I am joined by Lisa Bloom. Lisa Bloom of the Bloom Firm. She's legal analyst for AVO, too. I always say, Lisa, you're legal analyst for AVO. A lot of people don't know what that means. Can you tell us briefly what that means, legal analyst for AVO?
It's the biggest website for people seeking lawyers, AVVO.com, and I also blog there weekly, so I write a piece about some hot topic in the news. But if you're looking for a lawyer, of course, not a workers' comp lawyer.
No, you
go to Allen.
Right.
But if you're looking for some other kind of lawyer, and you don't
right.
know anyone, it's a great place to start. You can also get free legal advice. No kidding. You can post a question on the site, and you will get generally three answers from lawyers within 24 hours on the site answering your question, people who practice in the right jurisdiction and in the right practice area. If that's not good enough, I think it's $39. You can get maybe 15 minutes on the phone with a lawyer, or half an hour on the phone with a lawyer. Might be able to just give you a quick answer to a simple question. And if you need a lawyer really to pursue a case, and there's ratings on the site. I'm a 10.0, I'm very proud to say.
Yes, you are.
There's very, very extensive ratings on the site. So it's really, it's a free site, of course, and everybody should go on. You don't have to join or anything. And check it out, AVVO.com.
AVVO.com. And again, a lot of the lawyers who have high ratings on the site or are giving advice take it very seriously. They work very hard in order to provide these kind of answers to the questions on the site. You really have to know what you're talking about, and because there are three answers generally for the question, the person who is looking for the advice can actually see the difference between what one lawyer is saying and another lawyer is saying, which I think motivates lawyers to do a really good job.
Yeah, and we rate each other. So I could go on and rate your answer. Alan, I think that was a great answer.
Right.
You know, so it really is very, very credible.
And, you know, I'll tell you, I wish I had more time. My time is all filled up, not only with Gervie's Law, but with the Rowan Gervie and Wynn law firm. And I'm the head of a board of director, head of education for the state of California, for the California Applicants Attorneys Association. But I would love to have more time to be on AVO to answer questions, because I love helping people and I love trying to provide some insight in a very concise and meaningful way. And that's what they do, AVO.com. Now, we're getting back just quickly before we leave Steve Sarkisian. For those of you who are just joining us, I'm not sure why you're just joining us, but you missed a whole lot of great conversation about Bill Cosby. Of course, Lisa Bloom represents Janice Dickinson, who is suing Bill Cosby, but that you're going to have to listen to the podcast at rgwlawfirm.com on Monday. Steve Sarkisian, Is he going to have a case? And I understand we talked about before the break that you don't know the evidence, but in terms of a legal theory, isn't it true that if USC didn't dot their I's, cross their T's, he may in fact have a wrongful termination case?
Yeah, he very well might, because if he can prove that he has alcoholism, that he advised his employer of that they failed to reasonably accommodate him, and that, you know, I think he alleges that he was on his way to rehab when he got fired, you know, that's just not nice. That doesn't look good. You know, sometimes the facts don't have to neatly fit into some legal element. If it just looks bad, you know, that's something you don't want in front of a jury. If you're trying to get help and your employer fires you and you've essentially been a good employee for a long time, you know, I, as a plaintiff's employment lawyer, I would take that and run with it.
So absolutely.
If he can prove these facts, absolutely. If he can't, then he's going to go down in flames. So
you know,
we'll have to see.
I totally agree with you. As a workers' comp expert and specialist, I would do the same thing. If I see someone who is having a lot of problems at work, they've notified their employer, they've have medical documentation that connects the dots, so to speak, between the work and the problems they're having, and the employer just kind of shines them on, I think mm-hmm. that's problematic. For whether you like the law or not, the law is there to help someone, a worker who may be in a difficult position. But one of the interesting things that people don't understand, we see it in depositions all the time in workers' compensation, is they have their deposition taken, they file the workers' comp case, and in the deposition, the defense attorney is trying desperately to get them to say, I was a great performer, I did a great job, everything was fine, and I was treated poorly. When I advise my clients, if they want to say that in a deposition, it kind of suggests to me that maybe they aren't injured and maybe their performance wasn't affected. So when you look at USC and you look at the fact that he was apparently intoxicated at that event, the USC Troy, whatever it is, something to Troy. I'm not a USC fan, so sorry about that. But
me neither.
Yeah,
I'm a Bruin.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to say what I'm. I went to Brown, so I'm a Brown Bear, not a UCLA Bruin, but close enough. So, but the thing is that, you know, if he is intoxicated at an event, it's affecting his performance. So when someone says that they're disabled or, you know, alcoholism, and they try and say, oh, everything was perfect and they discriminate against me, I tend not to believe that person. But if they come in their deposition and they say, I couldn't do my job, I couldn't sleep at night, I was drunk all the time, blah, 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 I couldn't do the job, that's giving support for the case against the employer.
Yeah, so it's a fine line. And I think, you know, the best answer is, look, you can be human. This reminds me of people always ask me, how is Janice Dickinson doing? And I always say the truth, which is she has good days and she has bad days. You know, she, for the most part, can get up and do what needs to be done. And she's working and she does reality shows. But she also has bad days.
Right.
So it's very hard and it's very upsetting. And she has to relive all of this. And she does not appreciate being called a liar. And
yeah.
I think for workers' comp folks, it's the same thing. You have days where you get up, you go to work, and you do a good job. And there's other times where it can be very, very difficult because of your injuries. And that's just being a human being, isn't it?
That is an excellent point, Lisa. I want to change the subject really quickly on that really good point. Let's talk a little bit about workplace violence and potential Islamophobia, which we're hearing more and more about after, of course, the horrendous events in San Bernardino. So tell us a little bit about what an employee can expect. Does an employee have any rights against someone who they suspect or think, rightly or wrongly, may be a closet terrorist?
Ah, I thought you were going to say, do you have rights against somebody who's treating you differently because you're Muslim?
No, okay, we're getting to that.
Let's go to the terrorists. Everyone has the right to a safe workplace. And if you believe there is some unsafe condition in your workplace, including a person who you think is unsafe because of some behavior, you should report that. Now, I emphasize, underscore, bold, highlight, because of behavior, not because of skin color, not because of religion, because we are American and we don't go there. And I would also say, just as a matter of logic and statistics, you shouldn't go there, because since 9/11, there have been twice as many terrorist incidents in America by non-Muslims, generally white right-wing people, than by Muslims.
Right.
So you don't want to single out Muslims.
Because there may be a lot of Muslims in your workplace, or some that are never, ever going to be associated with terrorism and radicalism.
My law firm, my family law attorney, Nadia Taghizadeh, is an excellent attorney. She's a Muslim. She fled Iran with her family when she was young because she was fleeing extremism, which is the case for a lot of Muslims in America. That's why they left, and that's why they're here, and they're very grateful to be here. And I have other staff who are Muslim as well, and they couldn't be lovelier people.
So what about employers? Should we adopt a type of Trumpism by, you know, Trump, of course, earlier this week said that we should stop Muslim immigration into this country. Should employers have the right to do these background checks of individuals who apply for work?
Well, first of all, Trump is Joe McCarthy of our time. He is a very scary demagogue who is playing right into ISIS's hands, and I think we all have to stand up against him. As a Jewish person, you know, my people know something about being scapegoated and singled out and being put on lists
right.
and being rounded up, and I react very strongly to Trump's comments. As for employers, you better not discriminate based on religion, or attorneys like me are going to come after you. You better not refuse to hire somebody simply because he or she is Muslim. You better not fire somebody for that reason, because that is prohibited under state and federal law. So don't go there.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I want to report something to you, Lisa. You may have found this out. You may not have. Recently, we needed to hire an attorney. We put an ad out there. We got about 100 responses of attorneys. And I hate to say it, but probably 70 to 75% had names on their resumes that were not considered an American type name. So I think that there is a big problem in this country where employers are not interviewing, they're not hiring people that have names that are not John Smith.
Well, I hear that, but I would say those are American names, Alan, right? So my associate, Jivika Kandapa, who is from Sri Lanka, he is an American. Right?
Well,
my associate, Capricia Vallecillo,
is as
American as I am.
Lisa, you're being too politically correct. I understand that, but let's be real. I mean, as it happens, after the 100, I did hire someone whose name is not considered...
Hard to pronounce.
Actually, it's very easy to pronounce.
Oh, okay.
Her name is Sylvia Ju.
So
she is of Korean background. But, you know, the point I'm making is I think there's so much discrimination right now based on people's names that it's hard for certain people to get jobs.
Well, I know what you mean, by the way, because I've hired all the attorneys and paralegals and staff in my law firm. I know what you mean. I mean, I joke about, you know, we specialize in hiring people with impossible to pronounce names. And then, of course, I make everybody learn how to pronounce everybody's name because I think it's important. I think there's a couple of things going on. Number one, there's job discrimination against those folks. But number two, there's a lot more people graduating from law school that, you know, are not John Smith, right? There's a lot more diversity. There's a lot more people of color going from all different countries going to law school. And I would also say that if those folks are being discriminated against, you know, I hate to be so callous, but I would say this is to my advantage because my team, which is a very diverse team, these are fantastic lawyers. And I know you probably think, well, you're just bragging about your own law firm. But my lawyers are so smart and so hardworking. And that's kind of the stereotype of the immigrant, right, that the immigrants are the most hardworking people in America. So if they were discriminated against by other people who didn't want to hire somebody with a hard-to-pronounce name, well, that's worked to my advantage.
I
couldn't be happier.
I love that answer. We only have a minute left on this subject. What would be the final word? How do we deal as, you know, I don't know, as an employment attorney with this issue of Islamophobia?
I think we all have to reach a hand out to our Muslim friends and neighbors. We have to get over the fear. The fear is irrational. You have a 1 in 20 million chance in America of being killed by a terrorist. And I posted all these statistics on my Twitter page. You're more likely to be killed by a toddler than a terrorist. You're more likely to be crushed to death by your own TV than to be killed by a terrorist in America. So I'm not the least bit afraid. And that means the terrorists don't win because I'm not terrorized.
That is excellent. What is your Twitter feed?
Lisa Bloom. Everything is Lisa Bloom.
Everything Lisa Bloom. It's the Bloom Firm. Lisa Bloom, thank you so much for being on Gervie's Law. We have talked about some really interesting issues, and your insight is always very much appreciated.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Alan. I really appreciate it, and happy holidays to you and all your listeners.
Happy holidays to you, too. Thank you all for listening to Gervie's Law. We'll be back next week right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
The preceding program.